Thank you for joining us this evening for Fulton County Hospital's COVID-19 update. My name is Renee Crowell. I'm a nurse practitioner at Fulton County Hospital. Currently, our community is beginning to experience a second surge of COVID-19. After 18 months, we finally thought that things were getting back to normal. People were getting vaccinated, cases were going down, some of the mask mandates were going away, but boom. In the past month, we've gone from 9 active COVID cases to over 80. That is a phenomenal burden to our healthcare system. Hospitals, clinics, we're starting to feel the strain. Nurses, respiratory therapists, laboratory technicians, physicians, pharmacists, everyone in healthcare is starting to feel this. And we wanted to come tonight to ask for your help and to give you information that's accurate about what's actually going on. We want to dispel fear with facts. We don't want to be political, but of course political things come in, but our goal is not to be political. We're not pushing any agendas. No one up here on this stage is getting a penny for being here. We are here because we care about our community, and we want to help, and we need your help in order to be able to do that. We're not pushing any agendas. We just want to be here to give you our expertise and give you the facts. And with those facts, hopefully, you can make some sound decisions. If you've already done your research about COVID, if you've already come to the opinion that you don't want a COVID vaccination, then you can just turn this off, go to the next feed, or click another link. But we're here for those that are honestly seeking questions, honestly have fears, have questions, have doubts, and want to get those answered. We've gathered some healthcare professionals that live in our community, care deeply about our community. We want to thank especially Salem First Baptist Church for allowing us to present here so that we could social distance, so that we could use their wonderful media team. Thank you, Sandy Massey. And with that, I was going to introduce our panel. We have Dr. Jim Bozeman. He is medical director of the Fulton County Health Unit. He is also an emergency room department physician at Fulton County Hospital. Next, we have Sonia Jones. She's an RN. She is the infection control preventionist at Fulton County Hospital, keeps care of all our statistics, keeps us up to date on what's going on with COVID, with vaccinations, everything like that. And then I'll come to John last because he's in a special category. Then to my left, we have Dr. David Kaufman. He is an internist and practices at Salem Family Clinic. He also is one of the two staff physicians at Fulton County Hospital. Then next, we have Dr. John Scribner. He is medical director at South Fork Living Therapy Center, as well as a practicing family physician at Scribner Family Practice. Then we have Darla York. She is the registered pharmacist for Fulton County Hospital, as well as operating Salem Drug. Then lastly, I invited John Hodges because we realized that when we take care of people, it's not just psychological, physical, mental, it is also spiritual. And a lot of people have questions that deal in the spiritual realm about COVID. So I wanted him to be here to answer some of those. And with that, I would like to ask you to open this in prayer.
Heavenly Father, we come to you tonight so grateful for the gift of our medical community. So thankful, Father, for our hospitals and our clinics, our physician's assistants, our APNs, our nurses, and all of the medical staff that work with patients. And Father, we just pray that you would give us guidance and wisdom. Help us, Lord, to be discerning. And Father, I just pray that all of our community would pull together And we would think of our neighbor before we think of ourselves. And I ask this in Christ's name. Amen.
Firstly, I wanted to begin with some general statistics about Fulton County and the COVID activity. So I was going to ask Dr. Bozeman to cover that.
Currently, in Fulton County, we have had a total of 1,457 positive COVID tests. Of those, we now have 73 active cases. I think I heard on the radio that that number may be down 3 today, but this was dated, I think, August
8th. Yes.
We have 1,267 patients who have recovered from COVID. We have had 49 deaths from COVID. So as you can see, it definitely impacts every county in this state.
Yes. All right. And could you tell us a little bit about what you're currently seeing in the emergency department?
Currently, most of the cases that we see are what is called the Delta variant of COVID. It seems to affect younger people. Back when COVID first came out, we were not pushing any type of immunization for younger, healthier people. We were more interested in getting the older senior citizens immunized, as well as people with impaired immune systems. But now that we see that the Delta variant has come along, we are now recommending this for pretty much anyone over the age of 12. It's not yet approved for small children.
Very good. Then I have asked Sonia Jones if she would present some information about the hospital. And Sonia, you have a microphone down there. You'll turn it on the bottom, I think.
I think it's on, yeah. Okay. Actually, some of the data that we had collected earlier this afternoon has already changed. Currently, we have 6 people in the hospital at Fulton County Hospital with positive COVID. And we did some research. The average length of stay for those people is 4.5 to 5 days. However, we've had some that have been quite long-term. We've had 2 COVID-related deaths at our hospital. In the last quarter, June, July, and August, actually, we've had 5 employees that have had COVID. All of those have returned to work, actually, as of, well, one of them's coming back tomorrow. But we've been able to keep those people at home. We've not had to hospitalize any of our employees at this point. In June, just to see how much this has grown exponentially, in June we had 2 positive COVID admits at Fulton County Hospital. In July, we had 10 altogether. And in August, as of this afternoon, we've already had 10. So that's a pretty big increase. Our positive COVID swabs, in May we had 6, in June we had 5, and in July we had 50. And so far in August we've had 29. So it is really getting out there in the county and growing. 75% of our staff at Fulton County Hospital is vaccinated. We do encourage everyone to do that. We have not made that mandatory at this point, but we do encourage them very strongly to do that. We got some information from the state. Right now, 20% of the COVID cases in the state of Arkansas are people under the age of 18. So this is very concerning. Children's Hospital is really concerned. They're seeing people, 1-year-old, 3-year-olds that have contracted COVID. Here in our county, we've had a positive 1-year-old. We've had 2 positive 3-year-olds that I know of. And so those are just some facts that pertain to our county. They're sad and they're very sobering. Thank you, Renee.
Thank you. On the next slide, Chastity Schaffler was kind of, the White River slide. There you go. Chastity Schaffler was kind enough to give us this information as of yesterday at White River Medical Center. Their COVID unit is 98% full. Their hospital overwide is 69% of the people admitted to White River County or White River Health System with COVID, 83% of those have not been vaccinated, and 16.7% have been. So, folks, that tells you a story right there. The vaccine may not prevent you from getting COVID, but it sure prevents hospitalizations and deaths. That's great. Okay. I kind of want to put panel members on a little bit of a hot seat. How many of these panel members have been vaccinated? All right. I promise you, if we thought that there was risks that outweighed the benefits, there would be some of us that would have gone with the option of, nah, I think I'm going to wait. One of the people that I tried to get to be on the panel is Charles Grinder, nurse practitioner who used to work at Fulton County and still does wound care there. For the first round, he was very resistant to being vaccinated. For him, he said the benefits did not outweigh the risks. Yes, COVID was bad. There were some bad things that happened with it, but he didn't think that he was at that big of a risk, and he didn't see that much benefit. You know, if he got the vaccine, he was still going to have the mask. If he got the vaccine, he was still going to have to social distance. So he chose not to get the vaccine. Well, guess what? A month ago, he got the vaccine. And I said, Charles, what's the deal? And he said, all of a sudden, I'm seeing guys my age on ventilators and dying. He said, now the risk of COVID outweighs the risk of vaccination. So he's fully vaccinated now. So I thought that was a good story. Dr. Kaufman, I wanted you to talk about, if you would, the vaccines that are available and any safety issues. And if any other panelists want to jump in and have anything to add, please feel free.
Okay. We have slides. If we don't, it doesn't really matter. Basically, all vaccines up until the COVID vaccines have been what we call vector vaccines. That is, they take a little bit of a killed or neutralized virus, attach it to a harmless virus, or somehow attenuate or weaken a virus, and then inject that into a human being. By and large, that's good. That introduces the antigen, the thing that our body reacts to. The bad thing is there was some debris in there and some foreign protein, and some of them were inoculated on egg serum, and so there were some problems. It wasn't a really clean vaccine. This new vaccine is essentially like a little printer, like a little template. It's a synthetic random amount of what's called messenger RNA. It is injected directly. Our body kind of comes up to it, attaches to it. Again, like a printer, it just makes an antibody to it. The whole advantage of vaccines, which a lot of people don't recognize, is that when you get a billion viruses that get into your nose, it takes a while for your body's immune system to react to that. And by that time, you may have a trillion viruses that have spread all over your body. As you know, viruses have to live inside cells, and like bacteria, they can't just live out on the surface. So they have to find a place in a hurry, but once they find a place, if our body's immune system isn't ready to attack them, then there's going to be problems. You're going to go from a billion to a trillion. If you've had a vaccine, your body's already got these antibodies, and they can start immediately and be able to fight this off. Viruses, by their very nature, tend to mutate. That's why we have trouble getting a reliable flu vaccine every year, and why one of the many reasons we can't cure the common cold is because viruses change. For instance, our body may inhale a billion of this COVID virus. Well, our immune system, if we're young and healthy, might can fight off all of them except two or three. Well, those two or three may have a thicker capsule. They may have a stickier spike, something that makes them resistant. Well, then they start replicating or dividing, and the next thing you know, you've got a new, stronger, more contagious virus. Right now, the Delta variant is still pretty susceptible to the current array of vaccines that we have. Unfortunately, we don't know what's next. Is it going to be the Gamma variant? Is it going to be the Lambda variant, the Kappa variant? And they're going to become more and more resistant. And if we don't get this under control before then, we're going to be back at square one. And, you know, we're going to be back where we were this time last year. And I might say that, like a lot of doctors and a lot of people, including Dr. Fauci and others, I think we all underestimated this. I can remember Dr. Fauci saying last March that, oh, it's like a bad flu. I don't really think we need to quarantine or, you know, cut off air travel, and I don't think we really need to wear masks. But, you know, we've found that we've all been made to look pretty stupid. You look back at some of Dr. Fauci's statements, and he's a brilliant doctor. I think you can see that we didn't really prepare as quickly or as early as we should have. A couple of other things. A lot of people have said, well, this is just an opportunity for Bill Gates and you know, political parties and pharmaceutical companies to make a lot of money. You know, as Renee said, let's not politicize this. Joe Biden, Nancy Pelosi, Donald Trump didn't hold a gun to these scientists' head. So it's not a conspiracy. What it is really is a miracle to think that in 1 year we could isolate, test for safety, efficacy, and come up with vaccines that are anywhere between 70 and 90% effective. Again, I've never been so frustrated and disappointed in my fellow man than I am to listen to people tell me why they're not going to be vaccinated. That, you know, this is the government trying to program our brain, trying to find out where we are, you know, trying to make us into like the Walking Dead. Well, that's not the case. Everybody that worked on this virus had one goal in mind. It was not political. It was to save lives. And I just want to end by saying that I think doctors are very intelligent and we're very inquisitive when it comes to health-related issues. I don't think many doctors, and there are close to a million doctors in the United States, I don't think any of them would inject themselves or their family members with something that they hadn't thoroughly researched and thought was safe and effective. And the one thing I would like to say is that 98%, that is 973,000 out of 992,000 doctors in the United States are fully vaccinated. I don't think you can make a stronger statement against conspiracy and a stronger statement that the benefits far outweigh the risk.
Excellent. You brought up something that I would like to ask. Okay, we have, as healthcare professionals, have changed our minds so many times on this. Why should people believe us? One time we're saying only N95s work. Now we're saying simple mask work. We're saying unmask, mask. You know, we are flipping on a dime. Why should they believe us?
Well, medicine is evidence-based. That is, you see something and you change your patterns. This is a virus that we had not heard of 18 or 24 months ago. And things do change. You know, it may look mild in some cases, like you pointed it out, or I think Dr. Bozeman did. Initially, it affected only older people. And he said, oh, yeah, the average death is 84 years. But, you know, with these variants and all, things do change. Yeah, Dr. Fauci's been made to look pretty silly several times when he'll say one thing and then 2 weeks later, but the evidence changes. There are huge studies all over the world, and what looked good last week doesn't look good this week. What seemed to work in this 5,000 patients in Italy didn't work in 100,000 patients in Brazil. And so it is ever-changing. Never a day goes by that I don't read about it, and I assume most doctors do. But, you know, it's an ever-changing disease, and as it mutates and as new meds and all come out, we're going to back up on statements that we said 6 months ago.
Yeah.
That's the nature of medicine. That's why we call it practice.
Yeah. Dr. Scribner, I wanted you to tell us about what's going on in the nursing home and what you are seeing in your clinic.
Well, that was very well said, Dr. Kaufman. It's excellent explanation of everything. You know, in the nursing home, you're dealing with an at-risk population, obviously. So there was no vaccine with the first surge. So it was not uncommon for the three nursing homes I go to lose 20, 30, 40 of those individuals. Some went quick, and then others lingered for quite a while. And you, not to talk about numbers or money, but you just talk about the strain on the healthcare system. Mm-hmm. But now, I will say something positive. And I think this might relate to your slide you showed of White River Medical Center. A lot of our nursing home population is vaccinated now. It's not mandatory, but most of them are vaccinated. And so I will say, at the last I heard, which was today, this morning, South Fork was still doing good, Pioneer in Melbourne was still doing good, and Batesville, Mountain Meadows, there's several positives. People have been vaccinated, but they're not sick. We did have one lady die, but she was on hospice, and she didn't die of COVID. So some of those admissions of positive vaccinated people might be nursing home patients that were sick of other things that went to the nursing home. Well, they're positive. They have to report that. So that number actually is probably a little skewed, I would say,
okay.
As far as, because the nursing home, if you think about it, it is the perfect environment where, same way with, not that I'm comparing nursing homes to jails, but jails, places where you're cramming lots of people in one area, and you can try to be as sterile as you want to, but we all know it's a virus. It loves cool, air-conditioned air. It loves that environment. So it can spread like wildfire, and it did the first surge. But this second surge, it gives me even more faith in the vaccine, especially Moderna and Pfizer, that it prevents death and hospitalizations. So that's what we're seeing in the nursing home currently.
Would you by chance know what their immunization rates as far as employees?
Well, so that's a whole nother story. So, unfortunately, I don't want to throw out statistics for sure because I don't know them offhand, but I know more than half are not. But that's, I don't say that to say don't have confidence in your nursing homes, but I do say that that is a constant message we're trying to relay to the staff, that these vaccines are safe. They can, especially now that it's affecting young people. I can tell you stories of 30, 40-year-old individuals that I see as patients that are now in Illinois. You know, they're in Chicago, Illinois right now because there's no place to put them here in Arkansas or the five surrounding states. So, I mean, Brother Hodges, we're talking about this before. Can you imagine someone who's never been outside of Fulton County, let's say, that got sick and got airlifted to Chicago, Illinois.
they
wake up and think, where am I? What is going on? So, anyways, I think it's just extremely important that we get vaccinated, I think, and so forth. So,
yeah. Thank you very much. Darla, I wanted you to talk about, you're one of the pharmacies that are doing vaccinations, plus you're in the hospital environment and dealing with the medications that they're using to treat patients with COVID when they're there. So how's the vaccine program going? What are you seeing people doing as far as getting vaccinated or not getting vaccinated? And then I'll have some financial questions for you.
This week we've had more people ask for vaccinations, I think because of the surge, maybe. I've had several calls this week about children, and we will have Pfizer, which is okayed for 12 and up, so we can start doing that age, and hopefully by October 1st it'll be okay for 5 and up, or maybe 6 and up. Well, that's what we're hoping for, at least to get those school-age children. Okay. The hospital, it's a strain on the hospital financially for the drugs that are required. The average remdesivir 6 days is around $3,500, and we haven't been reimbursed for that, so that's really a drain on our financial budget. We've ran through $120,000 of that and just thin air.
And no money to show for it.
No money to show for it.
Any thoughts that money will be reimbursed at some point?
I don't know.
Yeah, that's a big strain. But the hospital is doing that because that is the standard of care.
Yes, they are.
And they are taking care of their patients. Yes.
Yes.
Yes. What about monoclonal antibodies? We hear about that.
We have been doing that. We are out right now, and we hope to get some more by the weekend.
Okay, good. Then in your practice at Salem Drug, how much reimbursement are you getting? I mean, some people saying this is a big pharma thing. It's a big push for people in pharmacies and doctors and hospitals to make money. How much money are you making off of COVID vaccines?
I have been told that we'll be reimbursed $40 per injection. I have been reimbursed for commercial insurance. I have yet to see any reimbursement for Medicare, Medicaid, or the uninsured.
Okay.
And I do have people that ask about a shot that think they can get it. The shots are free. They give us the medication, and we'll stand there all day long and give them whether there's money or not.
Awesome. And you have the costs of storing it, of...
Mostly the paperwork is unbelievable, the reporting. I mean, it takes a full-time person doing that on the days that you give injections.
Yeah. And you make $30 to $40 a shot.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe
it takes all of
if
that.
You're going to get paid.
It takes all of that for the...
So are you in it for the money?
No, I am not. I think we're all in it to save a life.
Okay. Very good. Kind of wanted to ask it a general question. If anybody wants to jump in, you're more than welcome to. How safe is the vaccine? Dr. Bozeman?
The vaccine is probably the safest vaccine that you can have. Just a word about vaccinations in general. A lot of people don't realize this, but smallpox, polio, those are viral illnesses. They have been eliminated from the earth due to vaccination. It took many, many years to develop a smallpox vaccine, and it's the one that we all had to get my age, and some a little younger than me had to get when you went to the first grade. The polio vaccine was developed over a period of time. In fact, I think I took 3 different kinds of polio vaccine because it was all being developed back when I was in grade school. So all of these vaccines have been proven effective. They've all been proven safe. Most of the stories that you hear about vaccines are just that, stories, and pretty much no truth to them. Everybody's worried about, well, what if I want to have kids? Well, there are no reproductive studies. You have to do years with a vaccine to do any reproductive studies. So there are no reproductive studies done. Now, there are no reproductive studies with polio or smallpox, influenza. So none of these vaccines have ever caused any reproductive problems. So I would say most of the stuff that you hear is hearsay. None is based on facts.
Mm-hmm. And Sonia, didn't you say obstetrics came out with a recommendation that all pregnant women receive the vaccine no matter what trimester?
Yes. Actually, I've got some research that has been done by several different specialists. Dr. Weineke, who's the chair of obstetrics and gynecology at University of Kansas Medical Center, said that the myth about the vaccine making women infertile, that's evolved from a false report on social media that claimed that the spike protein in the Delta variant was similar to a spike protein involved in the growth of the placenta during pregnancy. This is simply not true. Johns Hopkins University research proved that if the vaccine is given to a female, it will not attack the ovaries or cause infertility. These two spike proteins are completely different, and they have documented that there's no link between this vaccine and infertility. Dr. Chad Taylor, who's with the obstetric team at UAMS, actually was on a call that we listened to today, made the statement that there is no impact on fertility. This actually helps with antibody production or protection in breastfeeding women. It helps produce those antibodies in the baby. And they encourage pregnant women to get the vaccine. UAMS has actually seen the loss of several children or several babies because women who are unvaccinated and get COVID become extremely ill. And so that's a sad fact. They also stated that there is no limit to which trimester you can be in pregnancy to be vaccinated. You can get vaccinated in any trimester of pregnancy.
Thank you. Is there anyone on the panel that could talk about the risks of COVID in pregnancy? Mine is anecdotal, so I can't.
Yeah, I would just say pregnancy alone makes you immunosuppressed a lot of times, whether it's influenza or obviously COVID. So I would say anything a mother, an expecting mother, could do to protect herself and baby would be vital, I would say.
Yes. My daughter-in-law is 23 weeks pregnant, and she came down with COVID. Her obstetrician put her on aspirin for the remainder of the pregnancy and said that they would deliver early because of increased risk of abruptio placenta, the placenta becoming detached before delivery. And I talked with some OB nurses, and they said, yes, that's what they're seeing. So that risk versus no risk, the vaccine is worth it, in my humble opinion.
Can I say one thing?
Yes, please.
This is about, I have patients every day say, well, I read that you shouldn't get the COVID vaccine if, you know, if you have lupus, if you have cancer. Rheumatoid arthritis, if your hair is falling out, you know, they make up every excuse in the world. The CDC says there are no absolute contraindications to the COVID vaccine, either one of the two commonly used in the United States. Even if you've had an anaphylactic reaction before, they suggest that it probably be given in a doctor's office, obviously with resuscitation equipment, epinephrine, the stuff that you need. The only absolute contraindication is if you had a severe, life-threatening anaphylactic reaction to the first vaccine, and there have been fewer than 100 of those in the United States.
Okay. That was going to be one of my questions. How many deaths from the COVID vaccine? Do we know that number? So you said less than 100 with
anaphylaxis.
Anaphylaxis.
That are proven to be. directly related to the COVID vaccine, probably less than 100, certainly less than the 650,000 who have died from COVID.
And some of those were due to the polyethylene glycol, which is in the messenger RNA vaccines, which the Janssen does not have. So that's an option for people that are allergic to polyethylene glycol. I know that there have been, depending on which statistics you look at, 6,000 to 12,000 reported deaths to the VAERS, the Vaccine Adverse Reaction System. But after a thorough investigation, only three of those were found to be due to the COVID vaccine, and those were blood clots related to the Janssen & Janssen. And those were mainly in women of childbearing age. And since we know that now, and that that's a possibility, we warn people, and if it occurs, they've treated, and no further deaths. Is there an advantage of one vaccine over another?
There's no advantage whatsoever. The Janssen & Janssen is a one-shot vaccine, and if you want to call that an advantage, you can call that an advantage. Both the Moderna and
Pfizer-BioNTech.
Yeah, both of them. It's a two-shot. One of them is four-week interval. The other, I think, is three-week interval between the first and second shot.
Okay. Are we seeing any advantage as far as preventing infection, preventing hospitalizations? Any advantage over any of those vaccines?
I think Moderna and Pfizer are better. It's like 90%.
Right, those are in the 90%.
And Johnson & Johnson is 76.
In the 70s, yeah. That's what I heard as well.
I'll say this too. And, every year, like Dr. Kaufman mentioned, the flu shot is every year is different. We have to guess, best guess scenario, which flu strains we'll see every year. So they make a flu shot. So a lot of times flu shots, if we get 50%, 60%, we're tickled to death. We're like, wow, that's a good year. But 90-something percent vaccine, that is amazing. Amazing. So especially the Moderna and Pfizer. So I used to tell patients which shot, they'd ask me, which shot should I get? And I'd just say, whichever line you can get in. That's the line you need to get in. But now I try to steer my patients towards the Pfizer or Moderna at this point, just because it seems to be holding up better with some of the variants. But, any shot you can get, I think, is safe, it's effective, strongly recommend it.
Very good. I've had patients tell me that they don't want to get any COVID vaccine because it has a microchip in it, and they can use... The government can use that microchip to track me, and I just don't want that. So how do you answer that?
Well, I did some research on myths versus facts about COVID vaccines. And the myth about the microchips was actually started on social media after Bill Gates made a comment about the possibility of digital certificates to store vaccine information. Didn't have anything to do with microchips being in the vaccine bottles. However, this was interpreted as the use of microchips by someone in the Communist Party in Russia, and they spread that out through the social media system. They suggested that the immunization program was a sort of a covert chip implantation scheme. However, this is simply not true. If you think about it, we pull those things up out of a multi-dose vial. You can get five or six doses out of each vial. They're pulled up with a needle that's the size of a needle that's on an insulin syringe. Come on, there's no way that you could pick out one microchip out of a bottle of vaccine with a needle that small and inject it in someone. It's just simply not true.
Very good. Darla had brought up another point. Currently, we get the vaccine in vials that have multi-doses. So you're pulling up 10 doses out of one vial. So yeah, maybe you couldn't get a microchip in every dose. What are they going to do as far as single doses? Could we have microchips in that?
No, but there is supposed to be single dose vials coming out. I don't know the release date on it, but to save the wasting, because you have to use the vial within 12 hours after you open it. So there's talk of it coming in a single dose vial, so we don't have to waste shots.
I also tell my patients, you know, if you are so concerned about the government tracking you with a microchip in an immunization, you need to be throwing away your cell phone. Because everybody comes in with a cell phone, that's a whole lot easier to track and has a whole lot more information than a microchip could have. So that's been my take on it.
That was going to be my point, is usually I get that question as a person's looking up stuff on their cell phone, and I say, well, that is the perfect tracking device right there you're carrying around. So, yeah, I concur on that.
Yeah. Another question that I have heard, and the reason I brought Brother John here, or asked him to be here, I have patients that are truly afraid that taking the vaccine and it containing a microchip could be the mark of the beast. And they do not want to take the mark of the beast, be it unwillingly or whatever. So if there is a microchip in there, if they think they're getting a vaccine and it's a microchip, are they taking the mark of the beast?
Well, first off, you have to understand eschatology. And when you have eschatology, you have a certain system, and it's systematic. And 1947, when Israel became a nation again, that was one of the most prophetic things that's happened in our lifetime. The next great prophetic thing that will happen is called raptuo. It's a Latin word. It means rapture or snatching away. And that is the next great prophetic event that will transpire. After that comes the Great Tribulation. During the Great Tribulation, that seven-year period, is when that mark will be given, the mark of the beast. So it would be a biblical impossibility for that to be true.
Okay. Thank you very much. That helps. That helps a lot. I now kind of wanted to go into gatherings, masks and gatherings. Currently, several churches have closed their doors because of this COVID insurge. I know that First Baptist has closed temporarily and will be making a decision. I know that Viola First Baptist has a COVID plan, and they announced that they had someone attend church that was positive. Therefore, they closed church for 2 weeks as their church quarantine. So I would ask each of these health professionals, you know, do we need to be closing down gatherings? You know, are small gatherings okay? Can you meet with Boy Scouts or in a small prayer group? Or what do we need to be doing as far as isolating during this second surge? Any ideas, Dr. Bozeman?
Well, in my opinion, with the second surge, I would like to see the numbers trend downward for, I would say, a week. 7 days in a row with the numbers trending downward, and then I think we can resume normal gatherings. I would recommend that we do, you know, practice some social distancing, practice a mask, avoid large gatherings, you know. I would say, you know, no gathering over 20 people until we see the trend turn downward.
Okay. Do you have any ideas, Sonia?
Well, actually, the Arkansas Department of Health guidelines are encouraging people, even if you have been vaccinated, to wear masks in public places or even in small gatherings. They're encouraging children in schools as we go back to school this year, whether they've been vaccinated or not, they need to be wearing masks. Children, employees, visitors, all of those people need to be wearing masks. Daycares, they need to be wearing masks. So I think we need to be very cautious about gathering in large groups. 20 people is probably the most people that you'd want to be around. Remember to keep social distancing six feet apart. But according to what the Department of Health is recommending, we need to go back to being very cautious. And once again, these rules and these guidelines change nearly every day. We're just following what they're telling us to do day by day, but that's kind of the latest and the most recent information that they've put out.
Dr. Kaufman?
Well, first, I want to say two of the people I put into the hospital today with COVID apparently got the COVID at a church up in Mammoth Spring, at which the minister also got it, and he's very ill at this time. So every time Brother John and I talk about it, I say I think it's better to overreact than underreact. So I agree with Dr. Bozeman. Anything over 20 people, any place you don't have to go, especially like in a church, funerals, we're dealing mainly with elderly, vulnerable people. So I think the better part of valor is, you know, until we do have a higher immunization rate, until we do approach herd immunity, and nobody really knows where that is that 70%, 80%? And as Dr. Bozeman said, we just have to kind of look at it from week to week. But right now, you'd sure hate to get something like in our church, for instance, and four or five people die. I think, you know, virtual church or whatever is the way to go. And again, I would advocate not against having any weddings, parties, anything like that, especially on the inside. Outside seems to be a lot safer than inside. You know, a lot of times when you talk about outside, I went to one wedding that was supposedly outside, but it was in a tent. So it was kind of inside. So I agree. I think we need to, you know, go back to being conservative, not live under a rock, but just use common sense in distancing and masking. And I'm a firm believer that distancing is a lot more important than masking. Masking helps, but even with an N95, you can certainly get COVID-19.
So you mentioned outdoor gatherings being safer. So some churches are having parking lot services or tailgate services, and as long as social distancing is maintained, that could be a good option.
Right. Okay. I would think that would be an acceptable option.
But then in these particular temperatures, you also have to worry about elderly and young people getting overheated and that kind of stuff. So at this point, that may not be an option.
Right.
Dr. Scribner, your thoughts on it?
Definitely outside is much safer, I would say. I'll just say I appreciate the weight of that decision by our church leadership. That's a tough decision. But it's a decision made out of love, I think. You know, their love of their congregation. So don't think it's a attack on your liberty or your freedom to worship. We're dealing with lives here. Hey, we'll all get back together someday and we'll have a big old congregation and everybody can come back together. But that, you know, pray for your church leadership. That is not an easy decision, I think.
For
the church leaders that I see in my clinic, for various churches, you can tell until their soul is in distress. That is a hard, hard decision. So don't underestimate how that decision gets made. So,
Darla, did you have any thoughts on
My thoughts were the kids. I mean, even if we congregate out here, our children in the back are not protected any whatsoever until the vaccine goes to a lower age. And this Delta variant seems to be hitting under 30 more than the older people. So I know we have an elderly population in church, but we also have a lot of precious kids back there.
Yeah, very much agreed. And like Dr. Scribner said, I've had pastors from other church that really struggle with this because they're commanded to meet together. Fellowship is so important, and praise and worship is so important. So how do you deal with that? How do you struggle with that? You know, can you give us a personal perspective?
Well, the difficult thing about that, it's multifaceted, number one. Because you have the spiritual element, and our desire is to meet together. We're not to forsake the assembling of ourselves together, and some quote that. However, there's also the mandate to love our neighbor and to protect one another. So you're on a balance beam. And you have some people that, if you open the doors, they're going to be there. And many of those are compromised people, are now children. The other aspect that comes into view there is financial. And I know that none of us like to talk about money at church. However, everyone up here that has a job or a clinic or personnel they're paying, you have to have income to keep things going. So that becomes a burden as well. And then with the division in our country, with the different parties,
yes.
Some view it as political. And so you're walking a balance beam, and there's really no right answer, and you can't come out on top. But you try to do the right thing to protect the greatest number of people by a multitude of counselors and asking for wisdom and guidance, and then make the decision and live with the consequences.
At this point, I wanted to open it up to the audience to see if anyone had any comments, any questions, any things that we hadn't thought about or covered. Did you have something, Vern? You can go to the microphone, or we can repeat your question. Is it turned on, Sandy?
No. I don't know, maybe you can hear me good.
Can I borrow your microphone? And we'll... It should be on now.
Okay, all right. one of the reasons was an experience I had today, and but I'll address something a little bit earlier. I have been vaccinated. I got vaccinated in March. And I've heard something about a booster shot after 7 months, so I don't know anything about that. You might give me an answer on that. But then I can't remember which one of you said that, you know, some people have had cancer and so on. Well, I've had cancer, diabetes, arthritis, and I've lost hair because it's self-inflicted, okay? But I've heard so many things, just like you guys have said. And I'll just say that the person I was with today, 65 years old, he's worked in public service most all of his working career, and he's still in a little somewhat involved in public service here. And his wife, she's a little bit younger, and she's not going to have the vaccine. But one of the questions he asked me today, he said, well, when they go in to get tested, how do you know for sure when they're testing that they know it's COVID? That was one of the questions. And then another question, he said, well, I know they get more money if they take in patients. Well, then the nursing home, because I was there almost 3.5 years, and when this came up, I was told that, from not a reliable source, you know, but, well, if the nursing home takes a patient in, they automatically get $20,000 right away just to take the patient in, you know. So there's a couple of people more. There's a person at 55 years old, and he just says, well, you know, I just don't feel like I need it, you know. And he also is involved with the public. And the other person is 87 years old. And he is very involved with the public all of his life. And he says, well, I've seen and heard people that have died because they've taken the vaccine because of the after effects. So if I had the information you were asking for ideas, you know? If you could just put a sheet on, like you were talking about how much it costs and what little you get out of there. If I could just hand somebody a sheet, because if I'm going word to word, but if I got it written out, you know, mm-hmm. I can hand it to people. That would help me, you know, because it irritates me about the ones that are so stubborn about this.
Yeah. Okay, that's an excellent idea. Can I put you on the spot, Karen Everett, CEO of Fulton County Hospital? Do you get more money for COVID deaths?
No. We have none.
No money for extra for COVID deaths. All right.
I'd just like to say, along that same line, that people do think that, oh, you'll try to diagnose me because I know y'all get like $100,000 for each COVID hospitalization. Well, as Darla pointed out, we've not even been paid for the remdesivir that we gave back in July and August and some of the other expensive medicines we have to give these people. As always, the hospital struggles, and this has been no gift for them, but we are a county hospital. And I also see patients and their families upset because we won't let them in the rooms, that we have certain mm-hmm. visiting hours. And I've seen patients and their family just get belligerent. And I just want to say that our nurses and all our ancillary personnel are working overtime. They just do an amazing job. I think most people who have been to other hospitals and come back will tell you the same thing. I happen to be a patient in another hospital for 2 weeks, and their standard of care was nowhere nearly as good as ours. So I just wish people would be understanding of our nurses, staff, and realize that we are almost full. We do have nurses that have been sick from the COVID, and you know, try to work with us, that we're just trying to follow the rules. We're not trying to punish anybody or, you know, hurt anybody's feelings. And our staff has just done an exemplary job, and I yeah. just couldn't be prouder of them.
Absolutely. This morning, Dr. Griffin Arnold, internist at Salem Clinic, is on duty in the emergency room, and 7 a.m. he had a patient that had some heart issues and needed an ICU bed. Guess what, folks?
None.
There wasn't any in Arkansas. None in Arkansas. No ICU beds.
So. I'd like to add something to that. So because our hospitals are full, what's happening now is we're managing people at home critically ill. And our home health nurses and staff are absolutely going above and beyond to help take care of some of these folks. And I know Spring River is approved to start giving some of the antibody infusions now.
Oh, good, good.
There's some other advancements coming out, I think, pretty soon, too. But I just wanted to give a shout out to the home health guys. Hang in there. You know, some of them go into places that, you know, in conditions and the heat, and some places don't have air conditioning, but they're gowned up from head to toe. You can just imagine what they're going through to help some of these folks. So don't forget them in your prayers and thoughts. So.
Absolutely. Any other audience questions, comments?
First of all, I'd just like to say thank you for all y'all for being here. I really do appreciate your time and respect you guys tremendously. And my question would go to, say somebody that has had the COVID virus and have gotten through it, but they have not had the vaccine. What would y'all's comment be about their antibodies and their immunity at that time?
Thank Excellent you. Question. Thank you, Josh.
I think I'd be appropriate to answer that because I did have a severe case of COVID back in December, and 90 days later I got the Moderna vaccine 1 and 2 and had pretty strong reactions in terms of fever and aches and pains. And I had actually checked my antibody titers and they were off the scale after I had COVID. But we, just like we were talking about earlier, we don't know how long our natural immunity lasts. what our proteins that they measure, our antibodies they measure, are actually to what's called the nucleocapsid, which is the capsule. What appears to be the most important point to stop this is the spike. And that's what both of the, well, that's what all the vaccines aim for. So I think even if you've had the COVID vaccine, the CDC, even though some authorities have said, well, it looks like you've got good immunity, I think it's best to go the extra mile and go ahead and get the vaccine too, because we just don't know, but that's the current best information. Seeing if you've had COVID, whether it's a mild asymptomatic case or severe case, that it's certainly recommended by the NIH and the CDC to go ahead and get the vaccine.
I would say something else to that. So COVID's been around long enough that we've seen patients get it not only twice now, but three times now. So that's just more evidence that maybe your natural antibodies that from a certain strain of COVID may be specific to that strain. As variants come along, one of the amazing things about the vaccines is those antibodies seem to be covering those spike proteins from these variants. And so that's even stronger evidence. I concur with Dr. Kaufman that's why I would strongly urge folks who've had COVID to get the vaccine as well. So.
And the recommendation used to be that you needed to wait to 90 days after symptoms went away before getting that. They've changed that now to whenever symptoms. If you have had an infusion of monoclonal antibodies, you do need to wait 90 days later to get the immunization. Do you have anything to add to that?
No, I think that's very accurate. You hear all this stuff about herd immunity, and people say, what does that mean? That sounds like you're talking about cattle. But herd immunity is when you have such a large number of the community, in this case, the United States, immunized against COVID-19, whether they're immunized from the vaccine or whether they're immunized from having the COVID themselves, when you get, I'm just going to guess here, 75 to 80% of the people in this country vaccinated, then we have achieved herd immunity. What that means is that there are so many people vaccinated that there is not enough host left for the virus to replicate in, so that the virus is no longer contagious. It just simply dies out or goes away.
And Fulton County's numbers, 22% have been fully immunized, 6% are partially immunized. So ways to go on herd immunity. Jason Miller. The question is that would you, as healthcare professionals, recommend immunization for your children, your grandchildren? Dr. Bozeman?
Without hesitation, I can say yes, I would recommend it. I would give it myself.
Yeah, Jason, we've got kids same age. My 13-year-old, he went and got the Pfizer at the health department. He's had both vaccines. As soon as those age limits drop, and hopefully that's soon, I hope all three of them getting lined up, we're taking them straight to the health department. So if that, I have total confidence in the safety in kids.
We're working on it, but I think, when school starts back up, we're concerned about so many not taking it and coming home to your family members who probably don't have it anyway. So I just, this whole thing started, with slow spread because the resources were so maxed out. So when school starts back up, I have more concerns. We have the school board make decisions, but I don't know how effective it is, but like UV lights or these viruses.
Right now, that's a recommendation from the state health department, so we sort of have to follow their recommendation, whether we think that's effective or not. So.
And Jason pointed out, I don't know if the audience could hear it, that the schools have put in UV lights in the air conditioning. And what else was it?
It's not called UV light. It's something that's a virus killing.
A virus killing.
It's supposed to be actually more efficient than the UV light.
Okay. Very good. Proud of the school system for that.
Jason, I have some kids calling wanting the shot, but they have to have parental consent. Parents are uneasy with that consent. I don't know. You know, 16-year-old can drive and they come to the drugstore to get a shot. It puts me in a bad spot because I want to give it to them, but really can't do that. I don't know about the health department. They may have overrides for that.
Any other questions from the audience? Okay. Yes?
How long after school starts? I guess next Monday. How long after school starts do you anticipate seeing an increase in positive?
How long after school starts would you anticipate seeing more positive cases of COVID that would be related to school? Incubation period is?
I can't say that I expect to see an increase, but I would not be shocked if I saw an increase, and I would say within 10 days.
After the large gatherings, for example, the 4th of July holiday, we started to see a spike in numbers in the state within 5 to 10 days.
Church camp for the youth and for the children, what happened there?
Well, our children's camp, we didn't have too much of a problem, but with our youth camp, we came back with 27 positives, not just from this church, but from the sister churches. About 130 total at camp, including counselors, but that does not include those that came back and infected the other family members. And I had two, my granddaughter went, and my other two grandchildren became infected as well.
So a lot of it depends on, will there be masking? Will they follow through with social distancing? Yeah.
And the Delta variant is much more contagious. So
yes, with kids, it is more contagious.
I'll say the biggest factor is going to be whether or not the parents are immunized as well, so parents are, if you get enough parents immunized and you develop herd immunity, and the children are going to be protected because the parents are not going to be giving them the virus.
Any other questions? Okay. On the Facebook presentation, can we put those resources, Sandy? On there, I know you put them up there at one point. I put two videos up there that are about the Delta variant and tips about if you do get COVID, because not everybody needs to get immunized. I know we want them to, but due to allergies and, you know, if someone's truly, truly fearful and don't want to, there are some things you can do, supplements you can take that may help to build up your immune system. So there's 10 tips as well as a list of some supplements. And on the supplements that are listed there, there's caution. With all of them, you need to be contacting your healthcare provider to see if those are appropriate for you and your medical condition. Because like with vitamin D, that's one that you can overdose on. You can get too much of that. If you have sarcoidosis, you're not going to be wanting that. Conditions that might increase calcium, you're not wanting that. But on those, see your healthcare professional and see if that's something that might help. Also, if on the Facebook presentation you want to type in your questions, I'm going to ask these people to be checking the Facebook page, and I will be too, and answer those questions. If you want to be messaged privately, just say, PM me, this is my question. With that, I want to thank our expert panel. I think you guys have done an excellent job. I hear your passion. I hear your compassion for this community. I know we don't always agree on every point, but we've spoken from our heart and from our minds. And we hope no one has felt attacked or coerced or like they have to get vaccinated. But I hope that your questions were answered and that you can now make some informed decision or know where you can. Also on the Facebook page, I have a list of all the area places that offer COVID vaccine, which vaccines they have, and the contact telephone number, and would encourage you to contact those people if you are interested in getting vaccinated. So, folks, let's wash our hands. It's still the best thing, is it not, Sonia? Social distance, wear masks when it's appropriate, and vaccinate if at all possible. So, John, would you close us in prayer?
Certainly. I'd like to say one thing before I do. If we can't trust our own professional medical professionals that we call our doctors or APNs or PAs or pharmacists, then we probably need to go somewhere else. And that's why this panel has been assembled. So let's put trust in those whom we trust to take care of our bodies. Let us pray together. Heavenly Father, I do thank you for the wisdom that's been dispensed here tonight. I ask, Lord, that we might be, as Jesus said in Matthew 5:9, that we might be peacemakers and therefore be called the sons of God. Give us divine wisdom, guidance, compassion, and love in Jesus' name. Amen. And I do need the COVID committee to stay, please.
Okay. First off, thank you for attending tonight and listening.
And we have said we would come back together after our 2 weeks that we were not having service. And we need to come to a recommendation for our church.